Are we exposed? This is what every security team is wondering. But with vulnerabilities scattered across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos, the truth is out of reach, and attackers know it. There's a better way. Unify to defy risk with Tenable AI-powered exposure management. Tenable brings together all your security data and exposures in one unified view, giving you the attacker's map and revealing the critical paths and weaknesses they can exploit. Now your teams can prioritize intelligently, move decisively, and collaborate without friction. Tenable turns scattered work into a single proactive force. Instead of chasing noise, your team knows where to focus, gaining clarity, control, and speed to reduce cyber risk with confidence. Learn more at tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.
Good morning. Summer's approaching, and with it, fresh concerns over dogs being allowed to run loose on farmland.
Once the dog goes onto the land, being an old mill site, the dog's chasing them and panicking them, they run into the water.
Yes, we'll have more on one farmer's concerns and the wider implications in a moment. And then later, I'll meet the man who's removing the jargon and making BGS data a little easier to understand.
We've been putting them on a shelf, using geological speak, which is great for the science community, but for the agricultural world, it's not very helpful.
Oh, and from food production to cutting food waste. We'll also later meet the government's first ever food waste champion.
A third of everything we buy is thrown away, and there are huge consequences in terms of that.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Sean Dunderdale.
We start, though, where we left off last week. I mentioned right at the end of the programme that Monday was the deadline for evidence to DEFRA over Natural England's decision to revoke certain gun licences used for the shooting of wild birds. So with the deadline now passed, Michael Gove is this weekend reading through the submissions. James Peck is from the National Farmers Union. James, what did the NFU have to say to Mr. Gove?
Well, from our point of view, we've had an awful lot of feedback. Members are extremely angry about this entire process. I mean, it really couldn't have come at a worse time. DEFRA themselves have asked for evidence from farmers about how they found this new structure. And we've done our own research as well. And it's pretty stark, really. I think members were incredibly disappointed by the lack of warning about this revocation, and obviously caused a significant amount of confusion and legal uncertainty for farmers as well. There was also a continued exposure to legal uncertainty due to the rushed and unclear temporary mitigation processes as well. And that included issues in applying for and issuing of individual licences. And there was also inconsistencies in replacement licences, resulting in a lack of clarity between what exactly is legal requirement and what is simply guidance. And also the substantial economic impact on farmers, costing businesses thousands of pounds in some instances, as well as unacceptable distress to livestock.
I mean, it was the whole way it was handled was it was so rushed, wasn't it? And as you say, the timing right now, the graying season, lambing underway as well. I've been sent videos from some in farming where, you know, you've got lambs that have been clearly attacked by wild birds, and that's happening right across the country, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we found evidence that it's actually caused death in lambs as well. So this is, you know, completely unacceptable and causing entirely unnecessary stress to farm animals and farmers as well.
Of course, already an uncertain time for those in farming as well, so the last thing they want is further uncertainty.
Well, as we've said before, I mean, it really couldn't have come at a worse time. As you pointed out, growing season and lambing underway, this kind of thing is another thing that farmers have to deal with, and, you know, incredibly stressful for them. We're doing everything we can as the NFU to make sure the status quo is very quickly brought back.
I guess it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because nobody wants to think of, you know, birds being shot and being killed. And so those that are not in the industry, those who don't see the effects these wild birds are having, will think, well, yes, that's a good idea. You know, we need to tighten the laws. The implication was almost there that, you know, those in farming are simply going out and just blasting birds for the fun of it. But of course, it's not that, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think what's been really clear from the response from our members is that lethal control methods are not used lightly in any way, but they remain absolutely necessary in increasing lamb survival, reducing crop damage and protecting food hygiene when other methods either need reinforcement or fail completely.
So what happens next then? Michael goes reading through these submissions this weekend. I think he might be making a statement in the next few days, possibly.
Indeed, well, we certainly hope so. I mean, from our point of view, you know, the status quo being resolved cannot come quickly enough. We're right in the sort of part of the season that we desperately need these licenses in place. So, you know, farmers have some security over livestock and crop protection, and we need to see that happen as quickly as possible.
A speedy response, please. The message from James Peck there at the NFU. Well, we know our agronomist Sean Sparling's view on all of that, don't we? If you need reminding, it's on the podcast from a couple of weeks ago. You can always listen back on the website and on the app. Morning, Sean.
Well, yes, good morning, Sean. Do you know, I'm not going to go over and over that, but I'm pleased that the NFU are representing farmers and growers out there in the field. I walk 15 to 20 miles a day. I average about 75 to 80 miles every week. And all I'm doing is walking crops. I'm walking those fields that you drive past every day. I'm looking at the crops to see whether they need help from me, whether they need fungicides, whether they need me to control weeds that may damage the quality of the sample when it gets to the consumer. And that's what I do. I just walk around and I see Mother Nature, the good, the bad and the ugly every day of the week. I find leverets. I find lapwing's nests. I find skylark's nests. I see all of the wonderful nature all around me. But I also see the ugly side of it. So the other day at Stickford, I was walking some sugar beet and there were two pairs of lapwing in this field of sugar beet, and I could hear the distress calls. We got 15 crows. Now, the collective noun for carrion crows and any crow is a murder. There's a reason for that, because what they do is they draw away one of the adults who has to go and push them away and keep them away from the female, who is either sitting on nest or of eggs or governing the young which have just hatched. And what happens is one of the adults will fly to push them away and a little stream of five or six carrion crows filter back in to harass the female off the nest, destroy the nest, eat the eggs. And I actually saw two carrion crows pick off one of the young, and it's heartbreaking to see. And one of the reasons we need the general license and a version of the general license is so that we can control that situation, so that we can help protect the lapwings and we can protect our wildlife. It's not all about money. It's very little to do with money. This is about protecting wildlife, protecting our livestock, and protecting the crops that we're trying to grow, because they're going to go to feed us. That's what it's all about. We have to have the ability to employ all the tools necessary to control those situations and minimise the damage that they do to our wildlife, our livestock and our crops. That is really what it's all about, and it's as simple as that. So hopefully Mr Gove will listen to those of us at the sharp end rather than just the hysteria which had been blown up by Mr Packham and his friends. You know, it's good that we have this discussion, it's good that there is opinion, but there has to be common sense in there as well, and that's all that I have ever tried to get across. So let's go back to agronomy, because that's what we're here for. A lot of change this week out in the field. A lot of these dim, pale green, yellowy looking fields of wheat suddenly look green. They've all snatched hold of that nitrogen now, thanks to a very welcome rain, which has come in the nick of time. We can only get what we get, so we have to pray we get rain when we need it, and it looks like we did. So winter wheat has suddenly gone from growth stage 35 to flag leaf out. And we started to see flag leaf last week. Many of these fields now have flag leaf fully emerged and rolled. Now, remember, if you put a fungicide on a leaf which is fully emerged but still rolled, you will protect that entire leaf with the fungicide. But if it's only a quarter of the way out and rolled, you will only protect the quarter which has emerged, because the fungicides we have don't penetrate leaf layers to get to the rest of the leaf which has yet to emerge. So timing is crucial. Make sure the flag leaf is fully out before you go and spray, because you're trying to protect that flag leaf. The T1 fungicide that we put on 4 weeks ago or so has worked really well, and a lot of these canopies are pretty clean, but don't let your guard down. We've had wet weather, we've had windy weather. That is enough to spread the inoculum of Septoria in the base of these crops, up the stems and onto these leaves. So timing, as ever, is crucial. Now, the thing I would say is these crops are very lush. I've got winter wheat that's gone from just middle of my shins to above my knees in a week. I've got winter barley that was coming into awn below my knees and is now halfway up my thighs. I've got sugar beet, which has gone from cotyledon to four true leaves. Linseed, which has gone from 1 inch tall to 3 inches tall. Peas and beans. Everything's moving really quickly because of a bit of warm weather, warming soils and action of nitrogen nitrogen within that soil, getting them to grow. So just be very careful when it comes to putting tank mixtures on, because a lush crop is more susceptible to damage. And every single product we put on, whether it be a herbicide, a growth reg, a fungicide, an insecticide, a trace element, all of those things contain the active ingredient and a carrier, which may be water or oil, but they also contain a lot of surfactants, stickers, extenders, wetters, penetrants, adjuvants, all of which are active on the surface of the leaf in order to get those materials into the plant or the weed itself. So if you put 7 or 8 things in a tank, you're putting 7 or 8 times the amount of wetters, surfactants, stickers, extenders, penetrants, etc. So the propensity for crop damage is much heightened. Now, for me, I'd rather not put any more than 4 things in a tank. I'm working off personal experience, but once you start exceeding that 4 things in a tank, the risk of crop damage is much, much higher. So on a crop, which is what we're looking at today, which is very lush, very forward, it's moving very, very quickly, it's very susceptible, very sensitive, just be careful with some of those mixes. Also, just be careful with some of the products you're putting on. Herbicides, growth regs in particular, have cutoff timings. Make sure you're safe. And don't just drive past a field, think, oh, that looks tall, I'll spray that, that's ready. Get out there and cut them open and have a look. That's the important thing. Now, peas and beans, still getting hammered by pea and bean weevil. Linseed still getting hit by flea beetle. We're seeing flea beetle in sugar beet. I'm not sure how much good we are doing with insecticides this spring, pyrethroids out there. And as we said last week, now we've got some warm soil, a bit of wet, these crops are starting to grow away from that damage. So it's all happening out here in the field, Sean. It is T2. That timing is upon us. It's warm. We're moving through May. We're heading to June. Summer will soon be here. Harvest will be here before you know. But farming really doesn't get more intense than this.
He's not wrong. That's Sean Sparling of Sparling Agronomy Services. Now, I know that no responsible dog owner would want their pet to be guilty of causing stress and worry to livestock on our farms. You'd be surprised at just how often it's happening. Earlier this year, at the height of lambing, some farmers shared horrific videos of dog attacks on sheep, but it's an all-year-round problem for livestock farmers. Nigel Powell-Freeman saw firsthand the problem during lambing this year.
I bought some land probably about 13, 12 years ago in Ryle, which was an old mill site, and spent a lot of time kind of restoring it, making it look really nice, and put pasture on it, and I put sheep on it. So I decided to go for more of a rare breed, like a Jacob's sheep. And I've been breeding lambs in a small way on there, about 15 lambs a year for the last 12 years. And this year, it's the first year ever I've had reports of dogs freely on my land chasing the lambs. And I've lost 5 lambs, either being worried by the dog or chased into the river and drowned because they were panicking. So, it's quite disturbing. You know, I keep the same sheep, that's the ewes, every year. So I've had some of these are fairly old, and the same ram. And, you know, so they, although we breed the lambs and obviously use them, it is upsetting, you know, because it's, you know, it is a small scale, and it's, very upsetting. And obviously the lambs that drown in the river, obviously the first sign I'll know about that is obviously seeing them in the water. So it's quite distressing. What happens is, you know, the lambs, once the dog goes onto the land, being an old mill site, you know, they the dog's chasing them and panicking them, and of course they run into the water. We've managed to retrieve some out of the water and save them, but often they go into the water in such a panic that they drown. And that's been the most upsetting part of it. I've had sheep on there for such a long time, you know, and really just had no issues over the years, and it's really just been this year.
That's Nigel Powell-Freeman, the issues he's been facing with dog worrying of sheep on his land at Ryle. Good morning, I'm Sean Dunderdale. Have you tried recently to use data from the BGS, the British Geological Survey? They do have a wealth of great material used for those in farming, but it's not always that easy to understand. The good news is, though, that's about to change.
So I'm Clive Cartwright, and I work at the BGS, which is British Geological Survey, and I'm a GIS analyst as a trade. I manage a lot of hazard data sets and stuff like that. However, I do happen also to be involved in projects to do with agriculture and finding ways of how we can adapt and create data sets that actually are meaningful and useful for you guys to use. Because at the moment, we've been putting them on a shelf
using geological speak, which is great for the science community, but for the agricultural world, it's not very helpful. So I'm trying to explore with a load of other people in a team to find new ways of doing this.
So you've gathered a lot of material in, haven't you? You've got a lot of detail there, but as you say, it's making it more farmer-friendly, if you like.
Absolutely, yes. So we have a remit to deliver data that we've been collecting over, well, basically 200 years' worth of accumulated data in a format that, A, is freely available, and B, any more bespoke data sets and high resolution perhaps can be licensed. So we need to make it available, basically, and make you aware of what is there. What are the needs? What are the big questions that farmers need to address? And how can we do so they can sit down with their agronomist and work out how best can they use the land in a changing environment? So you've got climate change, economical change, you know, political change, all sorts of, we're going through a bit of a convulsion, and we have this information that might be, that can help significantly.
It's trying to identify, as you say, those key bits of that information that you've already got, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess maybe many of our listeners wouldn't even think about the British Geological Survey having a connection with agriculture.
That's exactly it. See, up to now, traditionally, we've been focused on science and other issues, carbon capture and everything else. But the agricultural sector, we really haven't come on board, and we really should. And now with the situation of change, there's a push by the government to say, come on, guys, you've got all this data. We need it. We need it now more than ever before. So that's what we're doing. We're going to try and make this data available.
Just briefly, the My Soil app. Tell us a little bit about that.
The My Soil app, yes. This was launched about 5 years ago now. And that was one of the initial vehicles to deliver our information for free. So it's a freely available app. And it's free to view the data, and it tells you all sorts of stuff like soil moisture and pH factor and everything else. But added to that, so that's using our data and various organisations and colleagues. There's a crowdsourcing element as well, where people can submit their data. They can photograph their ground, the soil, and if they have the toolkit that they can identify pH and everything else, they can submit information as well. So we're harvesting information from people out there, so we're engaging the public.
That's Clive Cartwright there from the British Geological Survey, hopefully making life simpler and even more useful for agriculture. On to the grain markets then. Let's get our weekly fix of things open field. Kit Dickinson is the man in the know this week. Hello, Kit.
Morning, Sean. How are you?
Yes, very good. Very good, thank you. So what's been happening in your world?
Well, really, domestically, new crop on wheat remains at this point down to weather stories, and they continue to emanate. But be careful, because European crop production remains at a high end of the expectations, so there will be aggressive sellers as we approach the harvest positions. Old crop, once again, difficult to gauge at this point. There is seemingly enough wheat on offer, so don't be surprised to see a further decline, with current old crop prices at a £20 spread to new crop feed wheat. With this in mind, consumers are filling their requirements quickly. Don't leave it too long before pricing any remaining wheat left on farm, or indeed in store. I mentioned on my last broadcast this is worth keeping an eye on old crop milling premiums. Currently, there is a £25 premium available for June on Group 1 milling wheat, worth taking when you look at the £15 to £18 premium and the £20 difference on a feed base for new crop. Australia will import its first shipment of wheat in more than a decade, with drought wilts supplying the world's fourth largest exporter for staple grain. The Department of Agriculture and the Water Resources approved the import permit for wheat from Canada. With the shipment expected to arrive in the next 6 to 8 weeks, it will be subject to strict biosecurity conditions. Limited news on oilseed rape this week. £300 a tonne still remains possible for June on old crop, dropping back in August and September to below £300, mainly due to harvest pressure. The majority of rape is now coming out of flower in Lincolnshire, with some varied quality due to poor establishment conditions last autumn. Barley. There is currently no old crop barley feed price. New crop prices are starting the season under £120 a tonne, but as we saw last year, that could change very quickly. Most barley crops look in good condition after the rains last week, which will affect the price and keep it down. Old crop beans are mostly finished now, with limited homes left needing cover. There is a small amount of volume trading in new crop on the back of the rain last week. but due to a mild winter, there are rising concerns of bruchid damage. Frost normally keeps these numbers at bay. Prices this week. Feed wheat for June, 146 to 148. Harvest, 135 to 137. November, 139 to 141. May, 144 to 146. Premiums on old crop, as I said earlier, are £25, and new crop, £15 to £18. Oilseed rate for June is 300 to 302, dropping back to harvest at 297 to 299. November, rising nicely to 307 to 309. And May 20, 313 to 315. Currently no old crop barley prices, as I've mentioned, but harvest 114 to 116, November 119 to 120, and May 20, 125 to 127. Old crop beans, if you can find a home, which are limited at the moment, will be 230 to 235. Moving forward to November, new crop 185 to 190. There is limited carry going forward, so May 20, 190 to 195.
Thanks as ever, Kit Dickinson at Open Field. In a moment, the government's first food waste champion will hear a little bit about his strategy, but first let's have a look at the weather.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Well, it's quite an uncertain week this coming week. Some sunshine, but a few showers as well, maybe heavy in places. That's certainly the case today. We're looking at daytime highs of around 17 Celsius. The wind from the north, maybe north-northwest for a time, at about 6 or 7 miles an hour. Now, overnight tonight should dry out, maybe even clear skies for a time first thing tomorrow morning. We're looking at lows of around 9 Celsius, that wind continuing from the northwest at about 8 to 10 miles an hour. A sunny start to Monday, though it will cloud over. Again, sunshine and showers, really. Maybe a heavy shower in the afternoon possible. Some thunder mixed in where it does rain. 18 the high tomorrow. The wind from the north-northwest again at 10 miles an hour. And then drying out once again Monday into Tuesday. Clear skies to start Tuesday morning. 8 the low. The wind from the northwest gusting at 15 for a time. Again, it's a carbon copy of Monday, really. A sunny start to Tuesday, but it will cloud over with sunshine and showers to come. 17 the high, the wind from the north at 10 miles an hour. And then it will be more cloudy Tuesday into Wednesday. Staying overcast, we're looking at temperatures of 9, maybe 10 Celsius. Should be dry, though. And the wind from the north, 5 miles an hour for a time, though gusting up to 15, maybe 20 miles an hour early on Wednesday. Wednesday looks like being overcast at the moment, a little bit cooler as well with the winds from the north at about 15 miles an hour, 12 generally the high. And then as we head towards the end of the week, could be a wetter end to the week. We shall see. That could change, all dependent on where the jet stream ends up. We'll, of course, keep you updated with our hourly forecasts. For now, though, that is the forecast. Now, did you know the government has appointed its first ever food waste champion? His name is Ben Elliott, and of course we talk a lot about food production here on the Farming Programme. It's what agriculture's all about. But what about the waste? When the produce that's grown ends up in our kitchens, and then a third of what we buy ends up in the bin. Well, Ben's task is to cut the estimated 10 million tonnes of food wasted in the UK every year, and supermarkets Tesco, Sainsbury's and Waitrose have already signed up to the idea, promising to help halve food waste by 2030. So how's he going to do it?
As you rightly said, a third of everything we buy is thrown away. And there are huge consequences in terms of that. Not just to every household, that's nearly £600 per household that we're throwing away, but also in terms of the carbon emissions that come from this. That's basically the equivalent of every third motor car on our road in terms of carbon emissions that come from food waste. So today we're asking businesses, individuals to step up to the plate. But what you'll see, hopefully, in November is a National Food Waste Week where we come up with innovative ideas that all of us can do something about this. If you think about it, 70% of the waste is actually at an individual household basis. But what we need to do is with retailers and manufacturers and hospitality, is get them very aggressively to publish and report what they're doing and also to set a target. We said as a country that within 11 years we're going to cut food waste by half. That's 11 years. But for the last 4 years, nothing has happened at all. We've plateaued. So we need to do very dramatic things. And I would ask all of you, as you're having your breakfast this morning, to think of the things that you as individuals can do yourselves. I mean, the government can do one thing to help you. At the moment, only 50% or 51% of households have a food waste caddy. So actually, by measuring the amount of food you throw away, that might change your behaviour. But the four things that we throw away most are bread, eggs, milk and potatoes. And absolutely, you can do something about those things. With milk, you can make sure that your refrigerator is turned to 5 degrees. On bread, you can make sure the last third of the loaf can be frozen. On eggs, you can do a test, which I'm sure you do. And with potatoes, you can store those for longer. But I would urge you very, very seriously to shop more frequently and shop for less. And that will be the beginning of going in the right direction.
Thinking caps on, that's Ben Elliott there, the government's first food waste champion. So how do we cut food waste? Any tips in the kitchen? We asked Chef Ken Hom what he does.
Think about what we actually throw away. For instance, when I peel a piece of ginger, I wash the ginger and I peel it. I don't throw away the peels. I take them, I put them in a Ziploc bag and I keep it in the freezer. And sometimes if I want to make a ginger tea with honey, I just take out
the ginger peel.
I use everything. And in fact, even like, for instance, orange peel. You know how you peel an orange? Well, I take out the zest and I freeze it. I'm basically cheap. But you have to get back to cheap, and that's really good mentality, is not to waste anything.
Our last word this week to Chef Ken Hom. As ever, your thoughts and any tips you have for yourselves of cutting food waste, always welcome. Email through the website, or you can tweet at Farming Show. I always love getting your feedback. Until next week, take care.